It's my pleasure to announce the new head coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Randy Carlyle. It became obvious to me in the last week that we needed to make a coaching change if we wanted to try to salvage this season. And obviously I have a track record with Randy, worked for me in Anaheim, did a great job. We had success there. We intend to do that again. Been a difficult couple days for me, but I'm excited. I'm excited to be here today. I think this change is something our team needed. I think it was required, and I think we've got a guy behind the wheel that can get us where we need to go. I want to thank Ron Wilson for giving us his best as a coach, for doing a good job and working his tail off. I'll talk more about that, but I'll let Randy answer any questions you have, and then we'll let Randy get on with the day.
Your message to the players when you arrived at the hotel last night in Montreal?
Well, we met for close to an hour last night, and the reality was I sense that the hockey club is very, very tense right now. There's a lot of tension. I feel like the confidence level of the group is probably at a low where it's my responsibility and as a coaching and as a head coach and a coaching staff to pick these guys up. They got to feel a lot better about themselves than where they are today. I remember this hockey club playing against us in Anaheim, and the number one thing that they were able to prove to me as an opposing coach is they could skate. And that's what they have to get back to. They're a skating hockey club, and they got to get on their horse and start to skate. Now, there's various ways that we have to approach it and try to get them to do that, but first and foremost, they got to feel a lot better about themselves than what they are right now. And we're going to try and instill some confidence in them in a short period of time here.
Brian, you've talked about coaching indicators for letting a coach go. Did you see those in the past week or so?
Yes.
What were they?
Well, you know, let's ask Randy his questions, and I'm not going anywhere. I'm happy to answer that question. Let's let Randy answer whatever question you have for him, and then get back to work, and then I'm not going anywhere.
Randy, what's the first thing you do? Just basically tell guys to relax and start enjoying themselves.
Well, again, you know, it's easier said than done. There's a lot of pressure that's put on the professional athlete, and in the market in which we play in, the expectations are high, and it's as simple as that. But just taking a look at how many of you people are here today, you know, this is an indication of an everyday occurrence for these players and the scrutiny that takes place. But again, they're professional hockey players. They've made the NHL. They're at a level, an elite level. Now we have to find a way to re-energize the group. It's not that they have lost their skills. It's just that we have to rekindle their spirit. And it's important for them to go and feel good about themselves. They have an opportunity now to show a new face, a first-time impression, and that's what we talked about. I'm new here, and let's make sure that you give me everything you've got, both on and off the ice, and there's going to be some adjustments that are going to be required.
Randy, is it realistic to think that you can make an impact with the few number of games that are left in terms of the results this season?
I think as a coach, you're always most concerned about the next one. And tonight, the next one is the most important game of the season. And that's the way we're going to prepare our group. It's not about anything else that's happening next week. It's about tonight. It's about our first shift. It's about our first period. It's about being first on the puck. It's about getting the first body check in, creating the first scoring chance, drawing the first penalty. All of those firsts have got to be front and center with our group, and that's what we're about. All the other stuff is all, in my mind, is window dressing at this time, because our focus has to be on tonight's hockey game.
Randy, much of your there's been a lot of talk already about your previous relationship with Joffrey Lupo. Could you comment on that, please?
Well, Loops made a comment when we were in Anaheim previously about that he felt that I didn't use him correctly, and he was right. I made the mistake, and I said it at that time that we should have, and we made the mistake of not putting Joffrey Lupul at left wing in our top six grouping. But you have to remember that he came back off of some pretty dramatic back surgery. He had a number of infections, and we at one point thought he would never play again. And that's a mistake that we made and I made, and I take responsibility for that. I've talked to Joffrey Lupul about it. That is water under the bridge. He's a top six forward for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's having a career year, and good for him.
Randy, how much notice did you get on this particular opportunity? Because it must have come together fairly quickly. Can you just go through the timeline?
Well, I originally got a call from Bob Murray on Wednesday afternoon. I was actually getting ready to go to the Anaheim Ducks. We're playing the Buffalo Sabres. And the phone call came from Bob Murray that they were seeking permission to talk to me and that he had allowed that. And that's really when the process started, on Wednesday afternoon, late Wednesday afternoon in California time.
Hi, it's Rosie DeMano, Toronto Star. Was there ever any, inclination about saying no to this position? Doubts that were going through your mind or your own, having to... You also having to deal with the stresses of being in Toronto.
Well, there's always pressure that comes with being a head coach in the NHL. And the hockey part of it is one thing, but the media responsibility and component is another one. And in this market, it's huge. You have to understand that, and you have to accept that responsibility. And to say that you haven't thought about it, I didn't think about it, I had consultation with my family. And to me, that's the most important thing in this decision. Was once my family had given me the green light and said, Dad, if you feel like doing this, you think this is the right thing for you to do, don't worry about us. We'll go where you go. And that really was the turning point for me.
Randy, how close have you been able to follow this team from afar this year? And then maybe in the larger picture, as a former Leaf, have you always sort of tracked the way this organization has gone?
Again, living in California, hockey starts at 4 o'clock. So my wife isn't really happy when the TV goes on and we're watching hockey till 10:30 at night. But lucky enough, I can afford two TVs. And the issue with that is that the hockey club I've watched from afar, and everybody has interest in the NHL on what's going on in Toronto, because you guys make it exciting. You know, it's an exciting place to be. Your center stage, and you were part of the people that put it there. And to say that a kid from Ontario gets a second opportunity to represent the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think I feel very, very fortunate.
Okay.
All right. Anybody else?
We're going to break off. Brian's going to stay here. We're going to let Randy get back to dressing room.
Is after the trade deadline, you said we're sticking to the blueprint, and a lot of people are asking, what is the blueprint now? If you could just describe it to us.
Well, first off, the blueprint is we think we've put some key assets in place already with this hockey club. And at the trade deadline, all the deals we were presented were centered on where we had to wait. So we turned down four first-round picks for players on the team. We turned down trade offers on, I think, a total of 12 players. And every trade we were presented meant that we had to wait and our fans had to wait. So you get a first-round pick for a guy, what is that? That's 3 years for most of them. So it's 3 years we wait. And I said no. I said we think we've got a good young group. We have the youngest or second-youngest team in the NHL. We've got good team speed. We think we've put some key blocks in place as far as what we need to do. The blueprint is to win a championship. And there will be people who say you need to have your head examined when you're talking about having a parade with a team that's fighting to get in the playoffs, but that's the blueprint. That's the goal. That's all I'm interested in. So we kept the assets. With the change, there's two possibilities or two key reasons for making a coaching change when we did. One is that we think this coach gives us a chance to salvage the season where we felt the way it was going with Ron, it wasn't going to happen. But also, this saves us a month in the fall of a new coach coming in and putting in his systems and getting to know the players. And if we're going to miss, we're going to miss with a coach that gives us a better chance next fall. So we have control over the playoff spot with the schedule we have and the teams we play if we win our games. It's still a realistic, difficult road with the opponents we have, but it's still a realistic thing. I felt that with Ron, where Ron was with our team, that we had to make the change. But the second part is, and shouldn't be overlooked, is this saves us a month in the fall. I don't want to have a new coach the first day of training camp.
What does this say to the future of Dallas Aikens?
Well, I talked to Dallas this morning at length. Everyone on our staff, everyone in hockey operations thinks that Dallas Aikens is a hell of a coach. He is. He's done a marvelous job. But you look at the size of this group. He's never coached a playoff game in the American Hockey League. We just felt that this was putting him in a tank full of piranhas and sharks, and he would have no chance. His day will come. It may not be with us, but his day will come. Dallas Eakins is going to be a real good NHL head coach. I went through the same thing with Kevin Dineen. You know, I hired Kevin Dineen. He'd never been a head coach before. And you look, he's doing a pretty good job. And, you know, I think I'm good at identifying coaching talent and good at supporting coaching talent. That team's in first place by 10 points, I think, today, or 8 points. And we burned 2 recalls to make sure that Dallas has a chance to take a run. You know, we sent to protect Jake Gardner and Matt Fratton for the clear day roster in the AHL. We sent them down and called them back. We're down to 2 recalls now out of 4. You're only allowed 4 recalls after the deadline, which is, by the way, is a ridiculous rule, but that's time for another rant. Another day. But, you know, we want Dallas to have success there. We want our players to experience AHL playoff success. We think that augurs well for them in the future. That experience is vital in terms of developing players. I've told people this before. The miracle in Anaheim wasn't just that we won a cup. We played in 14 playoff rounds in 3 years between the two teams. The big club played in 8, and the American League team, the Portland Pirates, played in 6. And these were vital stepping stones for that franchise developing players. So Dallas is a great coach. He was disappointed, but he understands.
Ryan, how did you tell Ron and what that process like? I'm sure it wasn't pleasant.
No, it's not pleasant. I've the last couple of days have been brutal. I go back with Ronnie to 1973. That's where we were freshmen together, and played 4 years. It's not like playing 4 years pro. 4 years of college is, you know, September to June. And it's class together and lunch together. And it's a more close-knit experience than playing pro with a guy. And, you know, when you're playing pro, like the year I played in the American League, my roommate and I hung together. We were pretty tight. But other than that, you're kind of, it's not the same. It's not the same as being in college with a guy and playing college hockey with a guy. So the last couple of days have been very difficult. So it's not, I have to do what's right for the team, and I'm confident that we're doing the right thing. I'm really, despite my demeanor, I'm really happy about today. I'm really excited about today. I'm really pleased that Randy's the coach. But no, it's not good. Yes. Yeah, I think when I sent him an email and said I need to see you tonight at 8 o'clock, I think when you're a coach, you don't need a roadmap after that call. It's like when you're a player and you're at the end of training camp and they say the GM wants to see you. It's not good news. You're not going to get good news.
Brian, can you talk a little bit about the assistant coaching situation?
I always let the head coach bring in an assistant coach of his choosing. I have no input on that. As long as the guy's not a convicted felon, he's the coach. And Randy wants to bring in Dave Farish. We're going to get that process underway today. He handled the defenseman in Anaheim, and that required that Rob Zettler be reassigned. Probably the most unfair thing about the last 12 hours or so has been that Rob Zettler has been reassigned because he did a good job. There's no equity or fairness in him being reassigned. But this is how I do things. And the head coach gets to bring one assistant coach, and there's no debate. He wants Dave Farish. I think Dave Farish is a hell of a coach. I had him. I work with him. He's a real good guy. He knows what he's doing. He's had success. And so he's coming. And that means that, sorry? No. No.
When did you send the email to Ron, and can you, I think the question was
Well, after the last home game, it was clear to me that it would be cruel and unusual punishment to let Ron coach another game in the Air Canada Centre. I wasn't going to put him through that. And I don't fault the fans. You know, I think you buy a ticket and you want to boo, you can boo. That's fans show their emotions in many ways. They cheer, they boo. But the deadliest thing is when a fan votes with their feet and they don't come. So if you come, you want to boo, you can boo. I would obviously prefer that fans not boo, but I think you buy the ticket, that's the right you have. As long as you're not saying something racist or homophobic or obscene, you can say what you want. And but I felt at that point I wasn't going to put Ron through that again. It was hard to listen to, hard to watch. But also to me, it was clear at that point by then that the team wasn't listening. Watching the bench, they weren't paying attention, they weren't buying it, and it was time. And I think that, you know, that every coach has a shelf life. That day comes for every coach. It's like if you have a friend who lives near the airport, and he invites you over for a cookout, and you say to him, "How can you stand the noise?" And he says, "What noise?" They get used to it. And at some point, players tune out the coach. And I think the shelf life of a coach is tied directly to how hard that coach is. The harder that coach is on players, the shorter the shelf life usually is, unless you have success. And I don't like coaches who are warm and fuzzy. I want coaches who – the game shouldn't be fun. And I tell our players this all the time. The fun part of a game is winning. The game itself should be a difficult contest filled with hard decisions and hard battles. And most of the reinforcement a player gets during a game is negative. Coach can't come down and say, "Hey, you just had a great shift." He's correcting somebody else who was on that shift. So most of the reinforcement you get, most of the feedback you get from a coach during the contest is negative. And I don't want it any other way. I like coaches who are hard on players. I tell players this all the time. You look at coaches who are successful in our league. They're not warm and fuzzy guys during the game. John Tortorella, he's worked for me, coached for me in the Olympics. This is not a guy that, you know, that you're gonna have on the bench who's gonna be friendly and warm and fuzzy with the players. That's not how it works. It's not a hockey player's life. And Randy's demanding on players. And I think that Randy, you know, I think if there's one philosophical difference or philosophical commitment that Randy and I share, I like a rough team. And I think if you can point to one thing where Ron and I were on a different page slightly, would be that. I like it a little rougher than Ron does. But that's the only part we're in disagreement on. And Ronnie likes tough players if they can play too. But with Randy, it's, you know, he's hard on the players, he's demanding, and that's the way I want it. No, it was yesterday afternoon. I was at the airport. Thank
you. Were there any other candidates considering this process?
When you do a change, you shouldn't just go with a guy that you've had success with that you're comfortable with. We went through the process. External candidates, we spent a lot of time on Mark Crawford. Mark Crawford worked for me in Vancouver and did just a marvelous job. We spent a lot of time on him. We spent a lot of time on internal candidates, Dallas Eakins, Scott Gordon, Greg Cronin, Rob Zettler. We went through the process, and this is the guy that we all felt was the one who gave us the best chance for success.
Does Francois Allaire still stick around to help the goaltenders, and what kind of effect can Randy have on the goaltending situation?
Well, Francois Allaire is not going anywhere. I think we have the best goalie coach on the planet. That's not changing. Our struggles in net are not, you know, I'm not going to change a coach because we've got two young goalies that are battling right now. That's never even been contemplated. So, yeah, he's sticking around.
Brian, you're going to have to tailor the team to Randy's style, do you think?
Yeah, well, it's at some point. Not now. It's after the trade deadline. The only, you know, we can maybe tinker with it a bit, but no, that's something for the summer.
Randy brought up on his own the Horde. You've always been good at speaking to us on a level. Ron's not a bad guy, but he rarely made that effort for whatever reason. Did that bother you? Would you prefer that someone who works for you operates a little bit more at a level like you do?
I don't. I don't have to deal with you guys every day. That's the difference between me and a head coach. Head coach has to come out and talk to the media every day. I don't. I got to field calls and emails, and I got to speak at things like this, but I don't have to deal with the group every day. And I know that all the adjectives that have been said about Ron, he's arrogant, he's this, there's none of that in his life with me. I don't see that at all. And I think it was an acquired taste here, and where he got tired of dealing with the media, and his answers got shorter and maybe more caustic. And I have an easier job that way in terms of dealing with the media. I don't have to do it every day. I don't blame Ron one bit for getting in a sour relationship with the media, because that's what happens when you don't have success in the Canadian market. It happens to everybody when they deal with the media short term or on a daily basis. So, and I don't blame the media for Ron's plight. You know, like, the media can't get a coach fired. They can make it unpleasant at the end. They can accelerate it by a few days maybe, but a coach gets fired when he doesn't have success or when he loses the team. I don't fault the media one bit for what's happened here, but I don't blame Ron. I don't fault Ron for his view of the media either.
Brian, when you would defend Ron, you always would say that you hadn't given him the right players to give him a proper chance to succeed with his team. That obviously didn't change. How much of this do you feel falls on your shoulders?
Well, when I told the players this last night, when a coach gets fired, there's plenty of blame to go around. You know, it's easy to blame the coach. It's easy to shovel dirt on the coach. And the glee with which people have reacted to this is characteristic. You know, there's people that, you know, in the media that are really excited about the change because they didn't like Ron. But to me, I said the players last night, when a coach gets fired, there's blame to be spread and attributed to everybody. So did I give them the right players quick enough? Do we have the right goaltenders? You can ask all those questions. And yes, I accept a share of the blame for this. And the players have to, too. The players, in my mind, if this is a playoff-caliber team, and it was 2 weeks ago, and we just made a coaching change, then everyone's got to look in the mirror and say, I'm at fault. And I'm at fault here. There's no question about it. But I also feel we've put enough assets in place that this team should be in the hunt.
Brian, in your opinion, what went wrong in the period between the time that Ron got his extension and yesterday?
It's not even his. Ron got his extension, I think, the first week of December. And he announced it on Christmas Day, I think. But, you know, we had done the deal several weeks before that. And we were fine even 2.5 weeks ago. We were sitting in the eighth spot up comfortably. I don't know. I've never had this before. I've never had a team fall off a cliff like this before in my life. I've had dips. I've had slumps. Had rough patches. But this is akin to an 18-wheeler going right off a cliff. And I've never seen like it before in my life. I don't know what happened. I don't know. I've never experienced this. I was talking to Ned Colletti about this from the Dodgers yesterday. And I said, have you ever had anything like this in all your years in baseball? And he said, no. And he follows our team very closely. And he said, I'll leave the expletives out, but he said, I have no idea what's happened there. And I said, well, I don't either. I'm bewildered by it. It's like someone hit me with a 2x4. I've never had this before where a team just plain flat out went into free fall.
Brian, one of the oldest sayings in hockey is show me a good goaltender and I'll show you a good coach. I mean, you say you're bewildered. I've watched your hockey team all year, and to me it's simple. The goaltending hasn't been good enough.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's your view. I think the goaltending at times has been brilliant. I think the reason we're still alive statistically is because of Jonas Gustafsson saving our ass twice during the season. I think the goaltenders have played brilliantly at times. I think even if you look at the Florida game and you say we're down 2-0 on two shots, what's the goalie supposed to do about those two shots? Is there a goalie in the league who makes one of those saves? I don't think so. So it's not just the goaltending, in my mind. And I think the goaltending is bearing a disproportionate and unfair share of the blame for where we are, because I don't think the goaltending has been as bad as people think. The other night, James Reimer allows 2 goals. You show me a goaltender in the league, Henrik Lundqvist, anybody, you show me a goaltender in the league who'd stop those 2 pucks, because I don't think there is one.
Brian, is Randy's challenge in Toronto now a lot steeper than it was when he took over in Anaheim for you?
Well, I think he's got more assets to work with. You know, we were fortunate in Anaheim that Brian Murray had drafted a couple guys who really came along quicker than we planned on them, in Getzlaff and Perry, both Brian Murray drafts. But if you look at what happened in Anaheim, there's not one defenseman whose name is on the cup that was there when I got there. We rebuilt the whole defense, rebuilt a lot of the forwards, but we got, you know, the key attribute of that team, or the key development that allowed that team to win, was the emergence of those two young kids. Here I think we've got assets like that in place in terms of the quality of forwards we have. We've rebuilt the defense. I think we have a good captain. So it's a different, it's never the same. You know, it's never, when you take over a team, the challenges are never the same. The assets you have are never the same. But I believe that this team is capable of making the playoffs. Still, today.
Take two more. What's Randy's blueprint as a coach? How would you describe him? What are his strengths?
Clearly defined tasks. You know, that's one of the things I believe in, that a player who knows his job has a much better chance of success than a player who doesn't know his job. And on Randy's team, there's, you know, there's blue-collar guys and there's white-collar guys, and they know their jobs. That's one. Two is he's demanding. He's hard on players. And three is he likes a physical game. He likes a crew game, same as I do.